Channel one over. Channel one over, and a continuation of this with Wade and Jane and Rick this Saturday, the 5th of August, 72. Channel one over, and a continuation visit with Wade and Jane and Rick this Saturday, the 5th of October, 5th of August, 72. Channel one over, and a continuation visit with Wade and Rick and Jane this Saturday, the 5th of October, 72.
Rumor out that preacher's going to divorce his wife, leave his kids, and go marry another woman. Heard about that rumor. And then one day he comes over here and he says, I reckon it was Mr. Marvin, said, or Mr. Guthrie. He said, Mr. Guthrie, come on over to Cross Creek. We got to pray for Brother Bob over there.
I missed that.
Oh, it's really quite a little thing. It's a preacher came over from Cedar Key, held a tent meeting, and did good. Got a group together and went to a little house, evidently right down the road from the Townsends, and started up a church. It was doing all right. And Marvin said,
"John's a creek, wouldn't it be?"
I don't know whether it's a creek or not. They went to somebody's house and started the church.
Well, it would still have to be down the creek.
Okay. She pointed that direction. I didn't ask her.
I don't know.
So, the rumor got out that he was going to divorce his wife, leave his kids, and marry another girl. And one day he comes by, and I don't know whether it was Marvin or Mr. Guthrie that he talks to, but he said, Mr. Guthrie, come on down to Cross Creek. We got to pray for Brother Bob. He's been sinful or something like that. And then Mary says, wait just a minute. We've been hearing some rumors about you. He says, how's that? We've been hearing that you're going to divorce your wife and leave your kids. Is that true? He says, well, yes, that's true. He says, well, I think you just ought to go home and pray for yourself. You're living in, you're going to be living in sin. And he stops and thinks and says, you know, you might be right. And they said, you know, he must have took our advice, because he went on back home, and very shortly, quit being a preacher. He started being a disc jockey at WGGG.
Oh, my God.
And Marvin said, you know, he was a good disc jockey. Matter of fact, he's good at anything he did. Preaching or disc jockey didn't make any difference. He was good. And you know he's been married 4 times since then? See, Marvin, he doesn't have too much necessity for this religion thing, and Mary does. She's got a strong belief, but neither of them now belong to any of his faith, they say. But they've done fell out too much with all of them. And Marvin sort of chuckles about it, and Mary, she's worried. She said, you know, it just don't seem right to me for us to labor and toil and sweat through this long life and get condemned to hell. And tears came up in my eyes.
Oh, really?
And I tried to slide in something about, you know, well, according to feel good and stuff like that, that maybe, you know, I didn't really think that.
Well, you just keep doing my shot
and
in that connection.
Oh, good Lord.
Let me
no,
tell
I stayed
you.
Off of it, but no consolation, you know, other than none.
Yeah, you don't have any consolation for them.
Marvin would understand, but she wouldn't.
Well, you just grunt and say, uh-huh. Let me tell you, I went over to that church at the homecoming. And Ms. Jim Hope is there, and her son James's wife, who shot him, and I saw Townsends I'd only heard about before, and they had dinner on the ground, and the old preacher was back, and he was a little sawed off fella, and he started lame, and he got into it, and he was slapping the poor. pulpit before you quit.
This is Cross Creek?
No.
Okay.
That's
this
over.
Is over. Windsor area. Where,
Windsor.
Where is it? Yeah, okay.
And the man that really caught my eye, I never can call his dad by name, but he was big, dressed in black, and set up in the front pew, and I sat back, and I could see his ears floppy. But he made announcements, and he prayed, and I said to him the next day when I went over there, or maybe it was that night we went by, I said, "You are certainly fortunate to have a man sit in your front pew who can lead the prayers and make the announcements." And they really had me on the rail. They really told about him. He is the one. He's Ms. Jim's Hope's brother. I see, I get those things wrong. And I said, "I'd love to go there." He said, they said they wouldn't let you in close to the house. Said you might smell something. "Oh, they just make a little whiskey," she said.
That is Jim, the wife's brother, the Hope wife.
I think so, I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
Maybe not. Well, anyhow, the two of them run the church.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, every now and then, they give me a little bit more of his tomfoolishness, and you see, that's what they run into them at all these other places. And, I'm telling you, one of the most extraordinary things I ever heard was Miss Glisson talk about the preacher over there that she had to run in with. She turned over all her cattle to him. He was such a God-fearing man.
This is Jake's mother.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And I'm telling you, that went to the heart of the old cracker mentality. She was just as hard as she could be. And she's got a hardness in her voice whenever she wants to get it there. And she kind of got, it almost looks like she's got one bad eye, but she hasn't.
Yeah.
But she's got that old cracker. You see, you got to use crack in both senses. One of them, you see, it's a cracker, it's a princely fella, like the old fella who ran the fish camp down here. Died last year before.
I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, the type.
Yeah.
That cracker.
Yeah.
Well, Jack Sanders' wife is just like that.
Oh, really?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You don't look at her too much without getting feeling uncomfortable.
Yeah.
She'll smile once in a while, and it's really nice. She'll smile and laugh most of the time, man. And she's got that thing, that voice that you're talking about.
Yeah, so I've had the cracker grind me, you see, with that heel right in the dirt. So I've seen it both ways. I've felt it as well as heard it. And it's something. But you see, what I was interested in, it was hearing it and seeing it. And,
yeah, I'd put Marvin on the other kind of cracker. Not maybe princely, but he's...
He is princely.
He is gracious.
He is.
He's the most pleasant person. Yeah. I don't understand that combination.
You know,
I mean, she's not a bum at all, but she's got sort of a lot of groaning to do. Mm-hmm. That's all. And he's... Goes right along all the time.
Well, you know, Ms. Rawlins says, you know, that she didn't know who learned the most, whether it was the Townsend learned for her or she from the Townsends. And the one thing the Townsends had, and that was back in the days when their children were bloated from not enough food, was the graciousness that they had. Mm-hmm. And they get it from the mother and also from the father.
The family's that way.
Yes.
It's not just Marvin.
Yes. It's what Mrs. Rollins says.
Do you know any more of the Townsends?
No. I don't know them well enough to know that.
Now, see, I didn't know but from what my few short experience has been with Marvin, but I was impressed. I mean, he just opened up immediately.
Yeah.
He just never went up or down.
Yeah.
Or put me off. And you know how you go up to some of these people, and they're going to play with you like a cat does a rat.
Yeah.
You know, they might mean good, but they're going to bat you around the corner before you, and you got to stand up to it and take it off. He's just straight.
Yeah.
Absolutely straight. Doesn't fool with anything.
In fact, I've seen him out in the field when I was over there helping him with the hay. And he was going around with that baler, round and round, making the bales, and then it just unhooked and fell off. And it probably took us 30 minutes to get it back on. We had to block the wheels and then put a block under the tongue and jack it up. And I was trying to help him, and I had never been around a baler before, and I was hurrying around, and I could tell I was just causing trouble. And he would just say, "Well, I'll tell you, we'll just take it easy." And he never changed his manner. He was just as calm and pleasant about it. Back tractor up, dropped the pin in, and off we went. He wasn't even mad the thing had fallen off. And he lost part of the pin. I remember there was a bolt and everything. He lost part of that and had to make a jury rig on it. He never was upset. He says, "We have to get another one of those pins." That's all he'd say.
He lived there 35 years in that house.
With her.
Oh.
See, I didn't know any of this because people kept saying, "Well, it's Mr. Townsend," and then they sort of casually called her Ms. Guthrie. And then I went over there that day, and we fell into talking about meanness and whatnot, and the killing of the son. And then she was saying, "Well, when Marvin came home from the war, he was so jumpy, and he used to be mean and yell at me all the time. I could hardly put up with it when Marvin came home." And that really got me puzzled, because I didn't know what on earth, because I knew the word that she was a Ms. Guthrie. And then she got into talking. She was always talking about Mr. Guthrie. Then Marvin came home. Finally it came out that he's stayed there every day, every night, if he wasn't in town working, for like 35 years. And old man Guthrie was 90 when he died. I reckon they must have been 30 years apart, two of them.
Oh, he was 50 and she was 16.
And they married.
And she knew him a month. That came out in the thing about their niece getting married, or nephew.
Oh, Wanda.
Wanda? And I've forgotten, it was something about... she wanted to be a hippie girl, but her family wouldn't let her, so she got married. So, and Marvin, at the wedding, he gets sardines and puts them on the manifold.
Oh, no. Oh.
And these people got the most glee out of that. You know, these like, she, Mary wouldn't even say son of a bitch, you know. She'd say, "And this man called me a yellow you-know-what." And she wouldn't dare use that term. Like, you know, this kind of thing. And then they go put sardines on somebody's manifold. And he made a nice, dirty comment about it. But anyhow, that's where she told me about she only knew him a month. And she still tears up when she talks about him all the time, Mr. Guthrie. She has to me. I don't know if that's your experience. But, I mean, keeps referring back to Mr.
Well,
Guthrie.
Now, that's the picture of Mr. Guthrie, a little snapshot that I wanted you to enlarge. Somebody came through and enlarged it and put it in color. but it's still not any good. And it's a beautiful picture. Well, it's a very poor picture, but it's a beautiful thing. There he's sitting on horseback. And now you see, he is a part of this whole country. And she is too. See, at 16, she took over that place at 16. And the only thing she ever says about Mr. Guthrie's comment is, he was a good man. He was good to me. So, you see, she has had a principality all her life.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking to the Duchess. You're not talking to a commoner when you talk to her.
I've got one that backs that up. Well, there's two of them in there, but the last one they told me about the Flim Flam man. She, this is that going out to the car. This came up because of land dealing. And she said, you know, not too long ago, I don't know how long ago it was, this man, Marvin and somebody were out there in the field. This was before Guthrie died. They were out there in the field haying. And this man drove up in a big, fine car, and he had a nice suit on. She described the man. He came up and says, you own this place? Sure do. Says, you rent from the company? She says, yeah. He says, well, I'm heard there's some trouble, and I'm here to straighten it out. Says, I need to talk to you. So she says, well, I don't know if any trouble, but come on in. She says, as soon as he put the foot in the door, I knowed I'd done the wrong thing. I sensed something wasn't right. So he comes and says to talk to me, and he says, you got something I want. She says, what's that? He says, I'm not going to tell you now, but you got something I want. She says, well, I don't know what it is I got that you want, but you let me know, I'll sure tell you about it. He says, well, what's your phone number? And she says, she told him the phone number. He says, well, I'll call you at 7 o'clock tonight and let you know. So he leaves, and I knowed all the time I'd done the wrong thing. And I got to worrying about it, and I called up Carrie, an old colored woman who lived across the road. I was wondering if she's the same one. Carrie was down in Micanopy all the time drunk here recently. He died not too long ago. But anyhow, she called her up and says, was there a white man came down there in a big car? I says, yes, sure was. I said, what do you want? I said, he wouldn't tell me. I said, he's going to be back and tell me. And she says, you know what? I think we ought to call the sheriff's department. So she said, so as soon as you hang up, I'm going to call. So Carrie hung up. She called the sheriff's department. They said, well, it's not a thing we can do about it right now. But I tell you what, if he does show up again, you call us and we'll be right there. So she said, things rocked along a bit. You ever heard her say that? She said it several times today. Well, things kept rocking along for a while. Things kept rocking along for a while, and nothing happened. Then Christmas Eve at 8 o'clock, Carrie calls. And she says, Miss Mary, says, that man done called me. He said he's going to come to see me. He's going to talk to me about something. She says, all right, I'm calling the sheriff's. And she called the sheriff and said, they can't put two men in my place, put two men in her place, and she named a couple other places. Well, sure enough, the dude rolls up in his Cadillac, and he had another man with him, and they go in this poor old colored woman's house. And the two sheriffs are hiding back there, see? And so they started in talking about how they were going to fix that house up for these people, make it a show place. Give him a, and she said her husband couldn't even walk, and they said they was going to give him a job driving a Cadillac as a chauffeur, and he couldn't even walk. All they wanted was, all they had to do was sign that deed, and you know, and they would do all this for these people. And she said about that time, the two sheriffs pop out from behind the door and says, we've heard enough, stick your hands out. And she said, they thought we were so far from town and didn't know nothing. Oh, she was proud. Whew. And she said, you know, they got so-and-so's property up there. They got so-and-so's property. She named them all. About three or four parcels of property.
Oh, really?
They got a couple of colored people bad. You know, just socked them. But they put them in jail on this one. And she said, you know, they just thought we was ignorant. Didn't know nothing. Because we're far from town.
Well, now, that Carrie lives, don't you know where the New Jehovah place is up
mm-hmm.
there? Well, she lives on the other side of the road. There's a trailer there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an old house and sort of a new house. Well, now, that old house is where she lived for a long time. And she was one of the big spirits of the countryside. Like Miss Bessie, Miss
mm-hmm.
Daisy, and and some of the others.
Was that old gal's name Carrie, the one that always used to want a little bit of wine because her back was aching?
Yeah.
That, wasn't her name Carrie?
Her name was Carrie, too.
That was a different one.
Yeah.
I just recall, I've got a little wine.
Yeah, she had the makings of it in her, but she went to pot and had been, she had been going to pot for so long. But Carrie over there, all the white people come around and talk to her.
Yeah.
And I talked to her before I knew who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And but she had that daughter there who lived in that new trailer, and she's a spitfire. And that's what cured me of going over there.
Couldn't handle that one.
No. And her children. She
oh.
had several children.
Oh, goodness.
And I gave him a job one time. And that was the last of that.
They're all trying to jump that gap now, I suppose.
I was never very good at that with the younger generation. I knew much better with the older ones.
Did Mary tell you about the mean colored man that lived back of them? The guy was so cantankerous. And, oh, the way it started out, we were talking about spirits and ghosts. I got off on that because she said she used to go over there and sit on the Indian mound sometimes by herself and ask if she heard anything. She wouldn't buy that. Oh, no, I don't believe in ghosts at all. And then it got off on a whole bunch of stories after that. And then one of them was that... one night, they were about to go to sleep, and it came. This was before the fence law was in, and there came this bull, longhorn bull, running close to the house and bellowing like hell. And she says, Mr. Guthrie woke up. He said, "Good Lord, I wonder what kind of bad trouble is going to happen tonight." She says, "What do you mean?" She says, "Well, something bad's going to happen tonight. Something really bad." Oh, man, that's just a superstition of yours. And so they go to sleep, and sure enough, that night, the sheriff went over there with a warrant to arrest that man, this mean colored man, and he shot him dead. He went over to get him, said, "Come on out now, don't want to hurt you. Just came to serve a warrant, that's all." And he said, the guard man stuck a shotgun out the door. Saw the double barrels come out. He plugged him with his .45 right through the door and killed him. And he'd pulled it. He had double off shot and shotgun. And he'd snapped one of the triggers. You know, failed to fire.
Whew.
Had the other one cocked. And she said, "You know, funny thing. I issued that warrant. I mean, I signed that warrant. Real sort of strange thing. You know, like she'd caused the colored man to get killed, but then it got all twisted around until it finally did everybody a favor. Killed because he was so mean."
Well, Woodard Coleman. His name was Woodard, the one the colored man is killed. And his, that's his, this Coleman that lives over there now, that's his, that was one of his uncles. And Woodard was over here one time, and I sort of casually brought that up, and he told me his side of it.
The colored people did get stirred about it, so it must have been another side.
I can't give it to you just exactly the way Woodard did it, but it was an entirely different story from what Miss Mary told.
Oh, really? I'd like to put those two together. It was the whole thing started over a syrup jug.
Yes.
That Mr. Guthrie had bought the syrup or something, and this man had come over and said he wanted his jug back. He wanted him to take that jug back.
Yeah, he didn't want the jug. He wanted him to take it back.
Take it back, he said. You brought it here, didn't you? You know, you take it back.
He's on his mule or something.
And yeah, and Mr. Guthrie was going to town about something, a funeral or a wedding or law or something. He says, well, I don't have time for it, but I'll get the jug and bring it out here. He said, I want you to take that jug back to my place. And then they fell into talking. I think she said he called him a dirty so-and-so. Dirty old so-and-so. And then he came in and says, well, he said, I'll go get my gun and come back here. And Mr. Guthrie says, I'll get my gun and meet you. And we'll just see who gets killed. And it was this kind of talk. And she said, I went... And he went in to get his gun, and I went there and shut that screen door and wouldn't let him out. See, she was stopping him to start with. Evidently, he was a smooth-running man, but you didn't get him mad, Mr. Guthrie.
No, he wasn't even excited. that's I don't think I've ever heard of him being excited. This fellow would have lived right across the road from him, right down there.
Uh-huh.
And the way all I know about it is what she said. He was he'd drink and get uppity.
Yeah, that's a bad mistake.
Yeah. at that time. But he was right there, neighbor. You see.
Yeah.
He didn't live way off. He just lived just barely across the road from him.
Uh-huh.
The old house had burned, and the people in it burned.
Ooh. But you don't remember what the gist of the other side of that story.
I have it on tape.
Oh, I think a tape would relieve my mind.
Yeah.
What I've been through this week. Let me idle a little bit more. There's so many stories going on all over the place. I mean, I didn't even get to all that, like, this that Mary lady.
Yeah,
Mary.
She talked to you.
She got I'd never even run into her before. And all of a sudden she opened up about one thing and the other. All things happening all
yeah.
over the place.
Where was that?
Right
was
in front of my house.
Right on the pavement.
We mm-hmm. had a little audience there. We just met up and she was right in the middle. And she came down with that letter and just stopped. And
you
started telling about her phone troubles.
Yeah, and then took off from there way back into histories and all kinds of stuff. And she's never said the first word to me or to anyone else of my acquaintance. She always drives right by, stops at that street,
mm-hmm.
goes right on home, and looks like, man, you just better not speak to her, or else she's going to have something hard to say to you. That was the way she looked.
You ought to hear me talk to some of to these people, and you'd get an entirely different view of it, and they would act entirely different.
You mean like Townsends?
Any of them, except Meganope. I mean, people like town. You can't believe what you see. It'd be so different from anything you've ever seen before or thought of. You see, I think of Miss Mary. She's one of the few people left, you see, who are like Twain and can explode. And I got that term from Devoto. Mark Twain's Eruptions. He uses it as the name of the book, and it gathers up some of Mark Twain's writings that he never published, just from his estate, you know. And part of that was his autobiographical, a lot of autobiographical writings that he did when he was. Past old. And they went west publishing. But he erupts in so many of them. Well, that is an old manner, you see, of the countryside. And it's very hard to get it now. That one of Ms. Glisson, you see, on the preacher who took her for a ride, was with cattle. Oh, that wasn't exact. That was something. That was vicious.
She really got into that.
Oh, yes. And she sustained, and she went through every motion. It took. She spent an hour or so on that one thing. Just sustained. And, see, that just disappeared. You just don't get it anymore. I start calling people flat-headed out here every now and then, and sort of start to explode, and they just wilt. You see, especially these mental people, you see, from the institution up here, they can't stand it. You got to talk to them in a sub-telephone voice. You see, their ears just don't fit the spoken word anymore. And that was one of the poetic forms.
Mm.
Now there's only one of it left, and that's just a suggestion in this whole country in print that I know of. That's Ms. Rollins, you see, on Zelma. Zelma is the one that was taking the census, and she went along with her, and she said she was a dried up spinster who had this enormous capacity for vituperation. And just another sentence like that, and 10 years later, Zelma took her to court, and all it was a little explosion in the manner of the country. So you see how far gone that is. But Zelma, all her life, did that. And that's all Ms. Rollins said, that she did that. That's all she said. And I've talked to him over there about Zelma and Zelma's manner, and she that was the poetic form that she had mastered. But now you see you got to use all Sunday school words. The language, you see, it's lost its start. You see, just a little bit in Miss Guthrie.
Now, she I suppose went through the whole story about the sun. When she started off with that, she prefaced it with a whole bunch of gory murder stories out of the newspaper, and then she got into that, and she started crying before she started talking.
Yeah.
She relived that. It was a long story about the sun.
Well, you see, what you see in her is that old dramatic, that old artist, you see, that the plumbers and the paper hangers and all of them
mm-hmm.
were there. They were all entertainers, you see. You didn't ask them questions. The thing just came up, and they carried it on. See, I thought, she hadn't got bogged down with all her studies this summer. She could have got into some of that with some of these people. And Ms. Gus is one of the best. And it's, she has all those gifts. I have just seen so many of those old gifts that she has. And it's that little space there, and old man Guthrie, you see, who fended for all that time, that preserved them. It's almost like a museum. And you see her trying to fend for herself, and she doesn't have any of the defenses of now. She can't defend for herself at all. All she can do is explode, erupt, as as DeVoto says. You see, 3 years ago he bought that new mower, and then last summer it just went to pieces. So what they figure is, down here they bought it at Ocala, the fourth place, is they just had an old mower there and painted it and sold it to them for new. Well, they can't protect themselves. Now you see, I can see that world, but I can also see the other one. I on the hay business. I was in with them the year.
You told me about it.
Yes.
I thought I had a connection.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I was in with them the year they decided to buy hay equipment.
Yeah.
You
That's
see,
the one.
You
okay.
see, now as they told that, Mr. Dodd would help them. And they depended on Mr. Dodd as long as they could, and was about to put him in the institution. Because Mr. Dodd would be working over at Citra, working for somebody over there. Marvin would have the hay down over here. Mr. Dodd would be on the way over there to bale it for him. Plow would be coming up, and Mr. Dodd would have to stop at home and eat dinner. It's just a cuss. So you see what you get into there. Now, Ms. Dodd, Shirley tells me that, her language must have been stronger at one time. She says it's strong now. I said, well, I don't hear any of it. Well, she says, I do. So she must have a great deal more freedom with Miss Dodd than she has with me.
I suspect it'd take some time to get her to be direct, feel that you're part, that she can go ahead and open up.
Well, I don't know.
She started damning when right before I left today. Well, she was saying damn this and damn that, and this is the first time she said it.
Yeah.
She was talking about the lawyer.
Yeah. Well, you see, I was sitting in that same dining room, and they had made that trade with Padgett up there at the Ford place, Ford mm-hmm. Tractor place, for Baylor and something else, and I can see her now. See, she was a little bit of sort of thing, and she was going back and forth to the kitchen, and she told me that, and she said to me, Mr. Miles, your troubles are over.
We got one.
Your troubles are over.
And you never heard from it since, did you?
I never heard from it.
Now, is
and that's the Baylor, that's the Moore that went bad on him, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what you
she see, is a dowager.
Yeah.
Duchess, or whatever you call it.
Yes, you got it. You can't use any of the old words. You see, what it is, you see, is this is she has been protected enough that all those fine old instincts. And one of the things you see is the openness of the countryside and almost total absence of suspicion, so that a tinkerer could come through the country and fill their pots and pans and steal half of them. They'd talk about it, but they wouldn't hold it against him much. And any business dealings they had, people beat them, but they still had that openness. Now, Miss Chitty is the same way.
You know, they said, we don't want to bind her on that property. We'll take your word for it. Said that to me.
Yeah.
I said, look, I'll give you a $1,000 binder on it. No, we don't want that. If you say you're going to do it, that's fine. And they're talking about almost $100,000, guy. You're right. It must got to be still there.
Oh, yeah.
And they could be taken.
Oh, yes.
They could be taken.
Well, you see the people that the Sears put on that roof for them, and everything's wrong with it.
Sears did that.
You know what they did with the valley? They just went ahead with the asphalt shingles.
Okay. That'll
they
work.
Didn't put any tin in there at all.
Yeah. $1,900 they said they paid for.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty expensive roof. That house isn't that big.
Oh, yeah.
And then they did the flashing on.
Yeah, everything is wrong. And
Marvin's just pleasant as he can be about it. Now, he doesn't get that thing you're talking about, getting stirred up or whatever. I hadn't seen
No, but he's got no defenses. Now, he can work out here at the university on an extension, you see, because they'll treat him right. Everywhere else, they'll beat him.
Oh, I hate to see him throw that money away, guy. They're going to be... Well, they'll still have that 75 acres, that's all I can say. They won't have any money. 7 years. There are too many people they're going to get it from.
Yeah.
That's true. They damn sure won't have it. Must have been a gracious land that allowed people to live on it with that mentality.
Yeah.
And it's not gracious any longer.
That's right. That's right. The institutions now all against you. And then they protected you. You see the sheriff.
High sheriff.
High sheriff would come out there and see by himself.
They used that term. It was a high sheriff, you know, and that was a...
No deputy.
That's right, the high sheriff. Bob Williams, I believe, was the name. Do you call that? I think it was supposed to be the sheriff that shot that man.
I don't remember.
I'm trying to pick up names. I'm still very, very bad on that.
Yeah.
It makes it easier when you're thinking about things.
Yeah.
Get a handle on them.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, guy, that was real refreshing for me to try to deal with them. Because this Micanopy business has got to be a burden.
Yeah.
I mean, it's way too close.
Yeah.
And
you haven't got in with McQuinney anymore.
No. This town thing just blown up sky high. And
It gets bigger instead of smaller.
Yeah. It possibly will settle down this week. We'll either get ourselves done in totally and... Or we might get a little bit squared away.
Yeah.
And then, of course, then there'll be an election thing they have to go through.
Yeah.
If we do make anything out of it. But the bloody phone's always ringing back and forth. Always finding out a piece of information and swap it around the circle. Good Lord.
Well, now, your circle is pretty good size now, isn't it?
Well, it's Bill Proctor and Joe Thomas and Troy Blakely and Walt Ebling, myself, and we get Thelma cranked me up the other day about something, and she comes in and off and on. You ever talk to her?
No.
Oh, she's not of the countryside, but she sure is vociferous.
Oh, she's good, though.
Ooh. Oh, that was a nice statement made by Hammaker, Mazu. She came back and said, well, I didn't hear that. Talking about something I mentioned. I didn't hear anything. She said, you know, ever since Thelma shut that store down, I don't know anything that's going on in Micanopy.
Yeah.
And
right.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
There's no more gossip center in Micanopy.
Yeah.
Now, you might be able to get a little bit at the post office and hang out. But Thrasher's is closed mouth. You don't get gossip out of there.
Oh, no.
No.
No. He never has, you see.
No. And all the people around him have to act just like him.
Yes.
There's a fella came by the other day from the agricultural department who asked to inspect those stores. I guess he comes by just every couple months. He pulled in down Red and White, saw they were closed. He came on down. I was sitting there. He went on down to Weaver's. And it's like everybody's going down to Weaver's and they don't know it's closed. And beat on the door and they look in and they realize it's closed. And he came back and asked me. And I said, yeah, it looked like it'd been closed up for good. And he said, well, I'm kind of glad to see that. He says, there's nobody to rebuild those stores anymore. They're all going to go. And it's hard for me to be a good guy and do my job too because they try and keep some fresh food back there and those stores are coming apart. And that goes bad. And I've got to go and make them get it out. And with these wooden floors, it says bacteria build up. And he had an egg can over there. He'd go through and can lay eggs and check all that. He says, see, I can just write this one off. I don't have to worry anymore.
I'll be dog. Well, it makes his job easier.
Yeah.
But it sure does cancel an institution. They're gone. Those institutions are dead.
Yeah.
And Thrasher's is sold soon. You know, Thrasher shuts the drink box off every night. and turns it on in the morning. And when you go in, he'll turn it on 7 in the morning. Drink cooler, he'll shut it off every night. You know how it goes around with the lights.
Yeah.
From this place to that place, pull the light switch. And
dark in there?
Yeah. One of the girls telling me over there at Chimwell, one of the girls staying with him. And they know more about thrash than I do. And so go in there, and if you want a drink in the morning about 8 o'clock, you've got to specifically request a cold drink, or he will sell you one that's been in the drink box all night, and he just turned it on at 7 o'clock and let you open it up and start drinking it.
Well, I would tell you, wait, about gifts. I learned this from Suzanne. I listened to Ms. Gunn and these people, and I came home and I put on a good bit, yes. Suzanne can listen to it for an hour and come home and put on every word.
You told me that.
And she can too. Without hurting her. And enjoy it. Without ever having practiced it. She still can do it. Now, and furthermore, she does it, you see, I can do it to some extent. I learned from them. And I hit the typewriter harder than they do, and it makes it come out a little stronger. But on her first draft, she gets it. Her prose is right attractive on the first draft. Mine not attractive on the seventh draft, you see. Another attractive mine. And you see what she's done this summer. It's nothing to me one way or the other. But what she's done, she's worn herself out on these masterpieces of world literature, and she hadn't had time to do any of these assignments out here, you see. And once she gets into this, she'll see more of what goes on in literature than she will from all that talk and all that reading stuff. Because this is what it's made of, and none of them know it.
I'd like to see you come over and sit on the bench. Miss Nopi.
She could do it.
There's one experience I had over there that I wish at least I'd gone in and done something real quick, because it's more or less washed out. I can pick up some of the details yet. But I was sitting on the bench, Buster was sitting here, and Jack Sanders was sitting here. And I was sitting in the middle. And we started talking about Duncan, the sheriff. And it had most to do with about a couple of single stories. But the real interesting part was Buster's fairly good storyteller if you get him loose and cranked up.
Oh, he is.
And he'll get into it, and it comes to a point there that something disturbed him, he'll go right into that, you know. He'll get up, and he might just really get mad about some things. But he did good storytelling. Jack Sanders is not a storyteller at all. But he would make his comments, and he viewed things very much differently from what Buster viewed.
Yeah.
And it was a right interesting situation between those two men to listen to this old time thing and the difference in the viewpoint.
Now, and what Buster was telling you was about Duncan.
About Duncan. It was all stories about Duncan. About two or three major stories.
Yeah.
One about his last killing.
Yeah.
Which, I was mistaken. I wrote it up as being a pistol whipping, but it was actually a shooting. When he went and shot the white man, then they said, well, you've gone too far. Now you shot a white man, you got to quit. And he gave the whole story detail by detail, and he was there. Roy Duncan came by and told Buster that he was going down to pick up this man on a warrant because the man had threatened Duncan himself, because the man was mad at Duncan because Duncan's dogs were tearing clothes off of his line. And he'd warned Duncan twice about it. The dog was still doing it, and he cursed at him and said he was going to beat up on him or something. So all Duncan did was swear out of warrant. And that was Municipal Judge Day in Micanopy, and he was going to get him. He was at work. He said to Buster, "You hear a siren, Buster? You know they're coming after him, not me." And a few minutes later, Buster heard a siren, and sure as hell, he shot him while he's at work. The man reached over and put down a Coke bottle, or pick it up, they don't know which. He shot him.
That's the end of it?
He died later. Put him in bad enough shape. I think that's true.
And Jack Sanders,
he said one of the reasons he didn't come up to Micanopy and mess around with people was because of that Duncan guy.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir. See, Jack he's a royal person. He might be lazy or inclined not to work, inclined to drink too much, but he's got a royal person inside of him.
But you can see that.
And he couldn't put up. His opinion about Roy Duncan was totally, and like Buster would go along with a lot of things that Roy Duncan would do. He might tell about it, but he'd more or less be along with it. Like him selling his wife to the truck drivers, this kind of thing, and also letting other men have his wife while he'd be standing around the corner even. And they all laugh and scratch and joke, and Jack, he didn't like that at all. Now, it's not that he's not being moral. Not that he's not at all a moral person. It's just that was that kind of action absolutely did not approve of.
Yeah.
And he wasn't moralizing about it.
And they told that on Duncan.
On Duncan, oh yeah. He lived with he had a colored maid. And she wound up staying in his house while his wife was there too. And he'd bed down with her. And finally, her husband got a little bit mad and came over and knocked on the door and said something. Duncan took him down to the city limits and said, "Don't let the sun set on you." And the man left and went to Ocala. No, the wife stayed with him in his house. Now, that wasn't long ago, guy. That was a very short time ago, because I helped bury that man.
Huh?
I went to that man's funeral, Duncan's funeral. I was supposed to be a pallbearer at his funeral.
Oh, you did?
Yes, sir. I knew him. He was not a good sight to know.
Well, I knew him at the same time.
Yeah.
At the end there.
Yeah, before he died.
Why did he die?
Huh?
Why did he die?
Oh, I couldn't really say. He wasn't exactly old age. It was probably just fell apart. Overdose of means.
Oh, yeah. And he was elderly. The only recollection I have of him is that he would come by Mr. Weaver's store and come in there at Buster's,
mm-hmm.
and his language was as strong as any I had heard.
Oh, yes.
Strong.
And he was even fouler, if it could be, than Buster.
And I couldn't, at that time, I couldn't listen, you see.
Yeah. Well, hell, it disturbs me, right? I mean, I'm far from being a moral person, long ways, but it disturbs me to hear about him yet.
I don't mean that. I mean, I couldn't just listen to any of them. I couldn't hear.
Yeah.
I couldn't project.
I don't think these guys would talk with, and on that particular subject matter, and it's strong, with, like, Jane around, but if Rick were there, Buster opens up once in a while. If you get him open and running, you get good stories out of him.
Yeah.
And he'll get off of his standard sex business. You give him enough time and show a little bit of interest and push him along a little bit, and he'll get off of the sex thing. He'll quit it and leave it alone. But if you just hit him every so few minutes or once during the day, it's all sex, you know, and you don't get story one out of him. Not the first one. You gotta bleed it off like a pop-off valve. I've swore to those kids that I was going to take them swimming between 3:30 and 3:45.
Well, you better hurry, Andrew.
And I didn't do it I swore yesterday, but I didn't get around to it again. Too many phone calls. And I better do it.
Yeah.
We've been going over this Lochlucy Lake over in the Wildlife Management area. Lake's brown, but it's swimmable.
Yeah.
Swim, splash around in it.
They don't care.
There was a sign that said, welcome.
Lochlucy Lake?
By God.
Over here on
the... Yes, on the Cross Creek Road. Somebody's torn the sign down. I think people are popular that do that. But it's the first time I've ever seen. It said, welcome, please
close
the gate.
How do you get to it? Wait, I've forgotten. I've been there, but I forget.
Well, you go down the Cross Creek Road, the one you was on this morning, turn right, going like towards Townsend's property, the one I'm piece I'm talking about. And it's really the first gate on the left. It's
hardly a mile. Oh, you just
turn
off through a field?
You have to open the gate.
Yeah.
Open and close it. And it's really a pretty place just to drive down to. It's always, oh, man, they've got some classic scrub cows down there. Let me tell you. Big, raw-boned, gaunt things with horns that are each one of them that long.
Woods cattle.
Oh, man, they're true scrubs. I mean, they're authentic. They must have made in Florida stamped right on.
And you just swim in that lake?
Oh, yeah. It's not really bad. It's, you know, appears dirty, but sure is wet and cool.
It's just brackish.
Yeah. Oh, we swim there as much as we can. And it's a pleasant place to be. You know, the oak trees and everything all around. It's just real nice. That was the first thing I headed for when I got back from that blasted trip up to Atlanta and back. And after 2 days on the turnpike and worrying with all these motels and whatnot and picture taking and what a world to get back here. I went around the woods. It was really pleasant. Whew. Guy, I don't know. I must get a tape recorder or something. It's all this stuff going on.
You can't use a tape recorder. You don't have the energy.
Well, I move around too much. Too many things been happening.
And Monday night's the council meeting.
Yeah. Oh, you mean night. For the council?
No, we got tape recorders for that.
Oh, yeah.
Is that going to be at 7:30?
Yeah.
All you need for that are little cassettes.
Yeah. I think Walt has two of them.
Yeah.
He's making sure he gets it right.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You never take one. And furthermore, you don't depend on the batteries. You put it on the current.
Mm-hmm. Probably get a better recording anyhow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, your batteries never go to flat on you.
Yeah.
And then you don't know that the battery is flat, you see.
Did you ever think that all this much would happen in Micanopy?
Well, not when I moved over there. Quite a peaceful town. That's what everybody's saying. Oh, you ought to hear the different reports. That goddamn social worker. I don't know what. Just a worker. He's a social worker now, see. Mm-hmm. You get that side of it. That social worker. As a matter of fact, the meeting they canceled Friday night, George Wilson was down there, and he was drunk and ready to raise hell at the meeting. They canceled it, so he didn't have anywhere to vent his spleen, so he turns around to Bill Proctor and lays the word of God on him about spending all of his tax money. And Bill just said he just let him go. Wasn't anything he could say except, yeah, it's all right, yeah. And they are, man, they don't like that. Nobody likes that. Jack Sanders, who's got more sense than anybody else, doesn't like it.
What's that?
The Vista worker.
Vista worker.
They don't know what he is doing or how in the world he's wasting money, see? They don't know that somebody's got to run around like a mad chicken and gather all this information together. And he does. Oh, he called me this morning. I gave him information yesterday. Last night, I said, Bill, I've just found out from Emory Cross, Red Cross, that there's a statute relating to such and such and such and such. We've got to find that. He calls up while I'm at 10 o'clock this morning. He's got the statute, number, everything, what it says. That's a helpful person.
He can do things.
Oh, yes. You want something, he'll bring you a Xerox copy of it within 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, that reminds me. Those notes you were going to collect over there, you never got around to that.
The
fire chief.
Yeah. Fire chief. And the mimeograph and those things.
I've got them all together.
Yeah.
What I need is copies of them.
I'll copy them if you get them.
Okay.
He can copy them.
Well.
I'm having a good swim.
Not before Monday night. See you then.
All right.
7 o'clock?
7:30.
Okay.
Well, I'll try to see Mr. Morgeson before that. Just see what is being hatched up on that side.
Poor man, I tell you.
You see, he's my old buddy. From way back. He's one of the first fellas I knew down here. And we've sat out there and chewed the fat many times.
Well, I don't know. Kept trying to ask him to. He should have taken the initiative and gone ahead and resigned when it started.
I think he just fallen apart. His wife has, you know.
Yeah.
And the last time or two I talked to him, he said the same thing over two or three times.
Yeah. Oh, he can't hold together under that pressure at all.
And he when he was over that store, he was hardy.
Mm-hmm.
He could hold together then.
Well, he can't do it now.
Yeah.
You can see him blanch.
Yeah.
You know, too many fires come in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got him at the last meeting too.
He just blanches.
His mind just don't work.
Well, it makes my mind tired as it can be. I just feel like unplugging it, you know. You wish you did have that recording. Pull the plug out. Quit. Trying to hold it all together.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, whew, after a few hours of that, you know, especially if it's an all-day session.
Yeah.
But if you get into a tight, hard one, good Lord, after 3 hours, you'd drug out. I mean, if you're trying to pay attention to all that stuff. It's strong. I don't see how you could stand up on it.
You know, I left a trailer with some bales of hay on it out there for Coleman.
Okay,
bye-bye, Wade.
Bye-bye.
Now, Saturday afternoon, he'd have his visitors or something like that, you know. And it's warm right now, too. I was just thinking, it'd be nice if Jane could listen to him talk a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to live around them, you see. And
I saw him yesterday driving that truck, and he was gripping along pretty well.
Oh, did you?
He drives it. So, you know, if you could get word to him, he probably would come right over.
Well, I just think about it.
Yeah,
Jane.
Be good.
Now we could go over there. We could just go over there and talk to him. But I don't want to go. I don't want to go over there. It's a very nice place, and the dogs and all like that, and the mule. But he could report on it. See over here.
Yeah.
See over here. Now he gets into things. Jane.
Wade
does. You see, everything he does, he picks up things. Now, this sort of thing, you see, he can't get into Miss Guthrie's mentality. It's out of his, you know, clear out of his reach. You see the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, it took me so long, and I'm just lucky. And you see, I have.